Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This episode of the Mosaic Life Podcast is brought to you by the Mosaic Life Circle. The Circle is the best way to be notified of brand new episodes from the Mosaic Life Podcast, contest announcements, merchandise deals, and all of the exclusive content we are putting out on Instagram. You'll get regular emails each time a new episode comes out, as well as when new contests are announced. Speaking of which, a huge congratulations goes out to Miranda from Oregon, who won our very first Vibe Box. She is going to be getting two books from both Ernie and myself, two books that have changed our lives, a brand new journal, as well as, and I'm ready to announce this now, a bonus gift, which is a brand new Mosaic Life Breathe About It t-shirt, which we are completely stoked to put out there. So be on the lookout for those hitting our store sometime soon. Sign up for the Mosaic Life Circle at onemosaic.life and you will be notified of all new episodes and contest announcements. Hello, friends. Welcome to another episode of the Mosaic Life Podcast. I am so excited to bring this episode to you today. We sat down with Mike Caden. Can you even say sat down anymore? I mean, I guess we were sitting, but we were all in different parts of the country, which is crazy. Anyway, we sat down with Mike Caden of Red Circle. For those of you who don't know, Red Circle is a podcasting platform. There's lots out there. You've got Libsyn, you've got Blueberry, and many, many, many others. But Red Circle is a next generation platform that really has the best interests of podcasters in mind. I came on to Red Circle a couple years ago when I was hosting Hashtag Questions. We had started on Libsyn and we were paying $20 a month. We were doing that for a good year prior to. And then somebody on Mike's team reached out to us, said they enjoyed our show, which was awesome, and they'd like us to come to their platform. So we gave it a shot. And honestly, I have not looked back since. The level of analytics alone that you get with your podcast, and the simple fact that it's free, is enough for any podcaster to want to explore Red Circle. Not to mention, there are cross-promotional tools, which we get into in this episode, and a lot more that allows you to grow and market your podcast. I've been obsessed with Silicon Valley for a long, long time. So getting the chance to sit down with Mike and just chat with him about not only his company, but tech in general and the environment out there, it was a dream come true. It was really, really fun to do so. So Mike Caden, he is the founder and CEO of Red Circle. It's a podcasting platform that helps podcasters turn their hobbies into a business. Mike is a self-taught software engineer who learned to code for the web so that he could speed up his workflow as a high school teacher. After building software for educational institutions and nonprofits, he spent 5 years at Uber building out all of Uber's engineering infrastructure for messaging and marketing. As a lifelong creator, Mike founded Red Circle because he discovered how hard it was for podcasters with thousands of fans to earn money for their art. With venture backing from top Silicon Valley VCs and an amazing 11-person team in San Francisco, Red Circle is excited to be delivering tremendous revenue for thousands of podcasters around the world. In this episode with Mike, we get into the ethics of podcast content and where platforms can or should draw a line, which has become especially relevant in today's media climate. And we also talk about the ways in which the industry is shifting. One of the big news stories this year in the podcasting world is the Joe Rogan Experience shifting primarily to Spotify and what that means for content delivery in the future. And of course, we ask Mike about the lessons he's learned from leading a major tech company while being a father to a brand new baby. So please enjoy this amazing conversation with Mike Caden of Red Circle. Welcome to the Mosaic Life Podcast.
Life is an art. Every moment a picture painted in time. The color, texture, lighting, all context. The Mosaic Life vision is to cast a warm glow on your masterpiece, highlighting the struggle while showcasing the culmination of years of hard work.
Join us for guided meditations, interviews with authors and leaders, and engaging conversation as we explore the depths of our consciousness. Welcome to to the Mosaic Life podcast.
Welcome.
Yeah, I am really, really excited about this episode. We have the CEO of Red Circle with us today, Mike Caden. I have personally been podcasting for, I guess, 3 or 4 years now. Previously was with Hashtag Questions with my old buddy Brandon. And then when you guys know the story about how Ernie and I came together, and at some point we switched over to Red Circle and we just have not looked back. And it's truly been an incredible experience for us as podcasters. And I'm really excited to dig in this conversation. Ernie, welcome. Thanks for coming back.
Yeah, man, this is great. I'm excited about this.
Yeah. And Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This will be fun.
Absolutely. Now, we were talking a little bit about your background prior to hitting record, and I am personally curious. You're in San Francisco, and I guess my curiosity is Silicon Valley the same thing as San Francisco, or are they different?
I guess technically Silicon Valley is like a little bit further south than here, but I think when people think about Silicon Valley, they think about the whole Bay Area. So, yeah. You know, I think okay. It counts.
Okay. Well, regardless, it's 70 degrees and sunny all year round, which anybody from Ohio will be envious of.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. It doesn't change here.
So you were with Uber previously, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I worked at Uber for about 5 years prior to starting Red Circle.
Okay, cool. And then I guess that whether it's tech or any sort of industry, it kind of takes a leap to go from ride sharing to podcasting. And I'm curious if you can just share that story with us.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it'd probably be helpful to tell a little bit of the history of my work at Uber for a while. I worked at Uber for 5 years. When I started there, there was about 250 people there, and about 40 or 50 software engineers. So still small enough where everybody in San Francisco was in kind of one big room, and was with the company when it went all the way up to, 25 or 30,000 people or something. Went from, tens of cities to hundreds of cities, tens of thousands of trips per day to tens of millions. And so really got a wild experience in how, over just a couple of years, how businesses and products can scale at a really amazing pace. Sort of after 5 years of doing that, sort of looked around, noticed I was working at a big company now, noticed I was interacting with a lot of folks who I didn't know and didn't know me all day. And just sort of envied going back to something smaller where you can feel the personal impact of your work every day and where you can, kind of have that special feeling that you get when you're building something with a small team. And so, knew I wanted to go work on something smaller. And then was interviewing around different jobs, didn't find something that was super exciting, and sort of all of a sudden, was talking to a few folks who have podcasts that I know, and they were describing the challenges that they face, whether it's figuring out how to grow their audience, whether it's figuring out how to make some money on their work, or maybe it's just figuring out the basics of getting the thing up there and getting it distributed where you want to go, and just found myself inspired by the challenge of taking audio content and getting it out to the world and maybe turning it into a small business or maybe just some grocery money. I hadn't necessarily left Uber planning to start a business, but all of a sudden I sort of looked around and it was 2 a.m. in the morning and I was writing a business plan and, something had sort of clicked, that I was like, okay, I guess this is what I'm doing now. So this is sort of how it happened.
Yeah, that's great. And I am curious. I want to dig just a little bit deeper into your history with Uber. Back as Uber was coming up, I'm just curious. Did you ever work with Travis directly, or was that kind of a, you worked under him? You never had a chance to interact with him. I know there is a lot of history with how he ran Uber, a lot of good things, a lot of bad things, but ultimately he created this niche that was unprecedented and really created this huge industry. And I'm just curious what your experience working with him, working under him was.
Yeah. I mean, the business was small enough that, that I would see him around. I wasn't important enough to really be in meetings and stuff with him, but, we had interacted a couple times. I would say we were probably, at, it was actually worked out nicely for me, where I think he would recognize my face but not know my name, which is probably good. Probably a good way to have it. And I mean, he was definitely a very unique guy. You know, he was you'd see him pacing around the office. Some of the folks had put up signs that said, you know, danger, Travis crossing at the places where he was going to pace by. Yeah, I think you put the put it right when you said there. You know, there's some amazing things about Uber. There's some things looking back that I think nobody's proud of. You know, I think when I set out to start Red Circle, you know, I wanted to work on something where I could look back on it and say with 100% confidence, you know, this is a fundamental good in the world. And I'm not saying that I don't have that view of Uber, but I'm not saying I don't have it with 100% confidence. So I really wanted to make sure that the next thing that I built was something that, you know, that could make money and that could be an important business and could grow, but also something where the customers and everybody else that interacted with it was benefiting in a clear way, and the world was sort of improved by that. I hate this phrase like, oh, you know, this company is going to change the world, you know, but for many of the creators that we do work with, who we've helped, you know, who've been podcasting for 4 years and have built audience of thousands of people, and we help them make that first check. Right. I think that is really meaningful for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, the podcasting, I wouldn't say, I guess you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's not a young industry by any means. I mean, this was in the early aughts that it really started to take hold. I mean, you think about Joe Rogan, who's been doing it for a decade plus. Would you still consider podcasting in its infancy? It's obviously changing quite a bit still. I'm just curious where you see it in its lifeline right now.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, yeah, you're right. It's been around for a long time. You know, the reason it's called a podcast is because it was around when iPods were popular. You know, people were able to download this audio from where they could find it on the web and get it onto their device. But yeah, I mean, it took many, many years before it became something that was mainstream from a listener perspective. And, you know, the latest data is about 37% of Americans above the age of 12 are listening to a podcast every month. I mean, that's pretty big. It's not as big as, say, the radio, where it's up by 90% or other media, but it's been steadily growing. And in the years since around 2013, 2014, when Serial came out and was really popular, it's really been kind of pushing its way forward. I think, you know, Bluetooth headphones and the mobile world has really also improved and made it possible for people to be, you know, listening to their friend or an academic or the news as they stroll to the store to pick up milk, or, you know, as I do when I'm doing the laundry or whatever. I think that's been a big part of it. But I think, you know, there hasn't even been $1 billion in advertising revenue that has moved through podcasting in a year yet. Whereas, you know, the radio is 20 billion, local advertising is 150 billion. I mean, it's still a relatively small market for the amount of attention that it has engaged with in the American populace, at least. And so, yeah, I would say it's sort of in its teenage years. It's clear it's growing. It's clear there's an opportunity here. It's clear from a listener perspective that people are really engaging. You know, the question is sort of how big is this business going to get? How many brands are going to recognize the value of the relationship between the host and listener and stuff like that. But yeah, the growth has been very steady for several years. And, you know, 37% of Americans is a lot, but, you know, more than that use, say, Facebook or Google or anything like that. Right. So there's definitely tons of room to grow.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely on the rise. You know, one thing I love about doing this podcast is having really incredible people and incredible stories on, and then teasing out the humanity within all of the story. And I'm really interested about this this point where you were at Uber, and then you found yourself at 2 a.m. writing a business plan. And you know, just the little bit I know right now, it would almost seem as though you've been part of the team up until that point, and then you created something where you led the team, and now you've grown to where you're working with, I think, a team of 11 people. I'm just curious, is like the transition from being within the team to being at, for lack of a better word, at the head of the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I made a transition from being an engineer to a engineering manager at Uber relatively early in my time there. I think at the time Uber was growing so rapidly that, you know, I typically refer to it as like a battlefield promotion. You know, things were pretty crazy. We were all keeping the thing alive with human energy. I mean, the technology there eventually became interesting and sophisticated, but in the early days, you know, it was people up all night fixing things when they broke, right? And, you know, my boss at the time was like, you know, you seem like you can talk to people okay, which is not necessarily every software engineer can do that. And so I think they just sort of said, okay, it seems like you can manage, like you're in, you're a manager now. And so I had been leading a team for most of the time there. I started working on Uber's communication systems, email, SMS, push notifications, phone calls for almost my whole time there. And it was me and managing two other people. And then when I left, the team was, I don't know, maybe 40 or so engineers with a couple other managers working. So just kind of happened naturally, you know, as Uber was growing, so too was the team. And so I was no stranger to running a team when I decided to come and start Red Circle. But it is definitely a leap from, you know, sort of big corporate environment to doing everything yourself. You know, I'm doing the accounting, I'm doing the, you know, doing out payroll. I'm doing support interactions with folks who are writing in for help. And so really, you know, there's no other people to take care of some of the things that at a big company take care of for you. So it's definitely a different experience from a leadership perspective. You know, I'm not finding it super, super duper different than running a mid-sized team at a big company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right on. I mean, how do you keep your head on straight? Have you always been level-headed, leadership quality type person, or was there a learning curve for you? And then how do you, you know, maintain that quality of leadership where everyone can look to you and feel faith in what they're building with you at the helm?
I don't want to talk myself up too much. I mean, I don't think I just don't think that's that special. I think I put it the other way in that I'm willing to, you know, to show the team that I'm vulnerable or show the team that I have problems or, you know, whatever else is going on. I don't buy into the whole idea that you have to put on this perfect face of, you know, shining success to be the leader. I think people will respect you more if you're just honest and straight with them. And that's always been my management style. What I will say is that from, you know, it does take confidence to get up in front of people and tell them, you know, where we're going and what we're doing and how it's, you know, if sometimes the news is not good and how do you manage that? And a lot of that I attribute to kind of two pieces from my life. So one is I went to a summer camp as a kid every summer for a long time. And, you know, that included kind of like, you know, outdoorsy kind of leadership stuff, ropes courses, camping trips where there was a lot of responsibility on the kids. And I think that's an East Coast thing. I think that had a profound impact on me and my confidence level growing up as a kid. And then the other thing is, you know, before I entered into this technology world altogether, I was a high school teacher. And, you know, when you get up in front of, you know, 25 kids for 5 hours a day, where they're actively trying to derail you, right? Yeah. And you know, you have to be on it, right? They're brutal. So your first year teaching was one of the hardest years of my life. And you know, they're brutal. And you know, I got pretty good at it, but it took a while, right? And so once you get good at standing up in front of a bunch of people who maybe don't want to listen or you have to convince to listen, getting in front of some people who are like an engaged audience who want to hear what you have to say, it becomes really easy.
Yeah, that is so funny. Thinking about if you just want to like get your chops as a speaker, just start volunteering to like substitute in classes.
Yes,
in high school.
There's no better training. I mean, there's no better training. And you know, by the time I was done there, I think you know, I was capable of like giving the lesson, you know, strolling around the classroom and like putting my hand on the shoulder of the kid who was asleep while I was still sort of on it and speaking and doing my thing. And also knowing, you know, which kid in the corner was passing notes all at the same time. Right. So you learn how to present, but also be present, you know?
Yeah. Spatial awareness there.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mike, you mentioned when you were at Uber, especially in the early years, you know, dealing with problems at all hours of the night. And I just want to, this is more of a compliment than anything else. You know, I have reached out to you via Red Circle
at least when it was extremely late here, I don't know, it probably 3 hours behind us, so it might not have been that late for you, but I do want to pay you the compliment in that you are so receptive to the needs of podcasters, especially new ones. I mean, relatively speaking, our podcast, and I am a new podcaster, so I want to thank you for that because it really makes the process that much easier for us to continue growing. So thank you truly for that.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, I think it's a differentiator for our business. If you Google around and say, what's Red Circle all about? You'll find Reddit posts where people say, maybe it's missing this feature, or, you know, there was a little bug over there, but the support people, you know, were on it and fixed it right away, and or explained to me a workaround or whatever. And when you're small and you can't have every single feature that some of the bigger players might have, or when you're new and you're hustling and, you know, there's a mistake that happens over here or there, then the best way to correct that and to manage that as your business grows is to have stellar support with people who know what they're talking about. And that's kind of one of the approaches that we've taken. And the other one is, you know, I buy into the idea of keeping a long-term view on this kind of stuff. So we believe that, you know, if we can keep all of our customers happy, that they'll refer their friends and, you know, they'll stick with us forever. And that's, you know, that's an important part of the game as well, is just kind of keeping your customers happy. And so that's what we do. You know, we're very dedicated to providing top quality support. You know, in many cases, we do it in real time and in chat within the app. And worst case, we do it over email and we try to get back to people as quickly as we can. And, you know, we have three other software engineers in addition to myself, if you want to call me that anymore. And, you know, we are the ones for the most part that are doing the support. So I think that really helps too. You know, we really know what's going on under the hood. And so when something breaks, we can really speak, you know, with confidence and with details.
Absolutely. And I am curious. So when I was first turned on to Red Circle, I don't even remember who it was, but somebody reached out to Hashtag Questions, invited us on the platform. It was fantastic. I've mentioned Red Circle to all my podcasting friends. It's a truly a great platform. You know, it just happens that I just finished reading Conspiracy by Ryan Holiday, the story behind Hulk Hogan, Peter Thiel, and First Amendment rights. And I'm curious, from a podcasting platform's point of view, have you ever, or what would happen if you were to attract a podcast that doesn't necessarily share your points, your personal points of view or your company's mission? I mean, do you say you're just not a good fit for our platform, or is that not a decision that you're willing to make?
No, I think we feel pretty strongly about this. We have podcasts that are, you know, liberal political views. We have podcasts that are conservative views. We have podcasts that are that take all sides of all kinds of interesting issues, and it goes to the other side too. You know, we have advertisers that that are products that I use and love every day, and then there are advertisers that I personally wouldn't use, but I'm not, as the guy that runs the marketplace, do I want to be the guy that decides on what advertising a particular podcast should be allowed to do or not do? Generally, we don't feel that way. Now, there are limits to that, certainly. Right. Incitement of violence, harassment, et cetera. I mean, there are things we can't have on the platform. And we have some provisions in our terms of service to protect against that. I think the issue of sort of free speech on the web is something that, we're running into in the largest of platforms. And, you know, even at ours, we're trying to be as thoughtful as we can about it to try to come up with rules that make sense.
That's great.
Has engagement with that changed in the past few months with all of this happening with this virus and so many different point of views coming through? Have you guys had to engage more in paying attention to that?
It hasn't come up. I don't think we have a ton of podcasts that are relevant for that topic, except right for on. People just kind of talking about, you know, how it's affecting their lives and stuff, sure, which is certainly fine. It hasn't come up in a deep way just yet. I think there's a good possibility that it could. And if you look at how some of the big platforms are treating it, you know, they're being a lot more restrictive than they have been in the past. And I think it's a slippery slope. I think you have to be really careful. On the other hand, I think for this particular case, if you're YouTube, you don't want to be seen as causing some kind of, global catastrophe, right? So there has to be a limit somewhere, right? And I don't think anybody really knows the answer. I think in the end of the day, you know, you can look at what Facebook just did. They've just put together some kind of board that's going to be reviewing their big cases of takedowns and trying to come up with policies that make sense. I think you can start to develop systems that have predictable rules. But, you know, whether or not something that's right on the edge of what should be shared or not, you know, I don't think there's a right answer to that. And I think, you know, we're going to have to come to terms with there is none. And then on top of that, the question then becomes, how much power do we want to give to giant media companies to be able to be the decision makers there? Mm-hmm. Right. You know, my view is the problem is not that they have the absolute power of what plays on their podcast or their videos or the content that gets shared on, say, Facebook. But instead, the problem is actually that these companies have just become so big that those decisions have become so impactful. Right. If your business touches billions of people and influences them, that is more powerful than any other thing that exists out there in the world. And that, in my view, is the bigger issue, right? If a tiny internet forum has bad policies for what things they allow or don't allow, big deal, right? That those policies have impact over billions, that starts to become a problem. And so, you know, in my view, for the, you know, some of these companies have arrived at a place where government needs to start taking a look and deciding if they're too big. I think that's the bigger issue to step into.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
So, I mean, and the Peter Thiel case as well is another really interesting one as well. I mean, I think we're coming into a new time where our understanding of speech and how this should work is going to be challenged. I think the last 4 years have really shown us that.
Yeah, certainly. And to your point, you know, it's going to make a big difference as to what platforms are giving a voice to certain people and whether or not they're silencing them or amplifying them. And I guess tangentially, you know, the big news in the podcasting industry over the last couple of weeks that Joe Rogan is moving exclusively to Spotify. I'm curious.
I was hoping we would get to this.
I'm curious, you know, what's your thought on, because for something that people may not know, and I myself don't truly understand the fundamentals of. You've got, you know, syndicators. Is Red Circle considered a syndicator that then syndicates it out to the platforms? Is that how that works?
Yeah, podcasting's it's tricky to put a mental model around without explaining the technical details. I think the best way to think about podcasting is it's a distributed protocol. So everybody hosts their own what's called an RSS feed, which is a sort of definition of the podcast. This is the title and the episode description, and this is where you can download the file for that episode. And Red Circle hosts RSS feeds, which are these podcast definitions, and we make sure that that we help podcasters get those RSS feeds connected, is one way to think about it, with all the directories and apps where people listen. So, you know, Apple Podcasts doesn't serve the podcast content itself; it just has it just knows where on Red Circle to come find you know, a particular podcast. So you can call us a distributor. And a better way to think about it is like we house podcasts, right? And all the different apps we show them where to come find the information.
That makes perfect sense. Okay. That makes things work better in my mind. So thank you for that.
sure.
So yeah, the question being, you know, what are your personal thoughts being in the industry of a huge, arguably the hugest podcast being moving to one platform exclusively? What ramifications will that have across the industry, if any?
I think it's going to happen. I mean, there's a lot to say. All right. So Spotify has done what's really a licensing deal, right? So they didn't acquire the Joe Rogan Experience.
Right.
The podcast is just only going to be distributed on Spotify. And, you know, Joe Rogan gets to continue to do his advertising revenue the way he was doing it before. So Spotify's not dipping in there. And importantly, to understand about the dynamics of the ecosystem, Spotify has much smaller market share than Apple Podcasts, you know, maybe 15% if you're generous of all the listening is happening on Spotify. And so Joe Rogan's listener numbers are for sure going to go down as a result of this, right? Because not everybody's listening to podcasts on Spotify. And he's also taking his podcast off of YouTube in its entirety. And so, you know, that's why they paid him, you know, people are saying more than $100 million for this deal, because, you know, his ad revenue is probably going to go down because the number of listeners are going to go down. But he's sort of been guaranteed this revenue from Spotify instead. A lot of people want to argue whether or not Joe Rogan's show is still a podcast or not. We don't take a firm stance on the semantics of it. But I think it does have profound impact on sort of where the industry is headed from here. I think Spotify has spent a lot of money and has put a lot of time and energy into bringing some of the best content that you can find in podcasting to their platform, whether that's Gimlet, which has a number of amazing podcasts, now Joe Rogan, as well as The Ringer, which has a lot of sports and entertainment content. And slowly over time, I'm sure they'll make it sort of more and more exclusive, so you can only find that content on Spotify. And, you know, I think if you are a proponent of the open web, if you like the fact that podcasting is distributed in the way I said before, where no one platform sort of controls, you know, who becomes popular and who doesn't, controls kind of how people are able to or not able to monetize. You know, the fact that, you know, you can go back to the discussion I just said before about individual businesses kind of growing to a size where they're in control of so many hearts and minds. You know, I think a lot of folks in the industry are starting to get worried that Spotify is headed in that direction for podcasts. Now, some people also tell me that that's silly, right? They only have 15% market share. A lot more listening is happening on Apple Podcasts than on Spotify. So, you know, I'd say they're still a long ways off from kind of running the show or being in control. But, you know, it does seem like that's their ambition, right?
Yeah, it does. And I guess it reminds me a little bit of how the music industry was consolidated to what, the Big Four. And I worry that, you know, if one company controls all of this content, you know, when do we lose creative freedom? I don't know what ramifications that will have in the future, but it does worry me that you have one person or one of these companies consolidating all of these podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, it doesn't matter who it is, if there's one party running the show, it's bad for creators. You know, they end up sort of getting inserted in a different place in the value chain. Now, again, I think Spotify is far from that. We have Google Podcasting putting an app on the iPhone for the first time recently. Google has also started returning podcast results at a much higher place and more prominently featured. If you search, for a particular podcast in Google, you'll start seeing results at the top where you can play it right there. There's rumors going around right now in the news that Amazon is about to ship podcasts with their music service as a part of Prime. Apple is already huge and sort of slowly losing market share. And so, you know, the hope is that, you know, there will be some competition in this space, because up until now, it's been, you know, really most of the listening happening on Apple and Spotify kind of slowly picking away market share over the last couple of years. It would be great to see lots and lots of competition for listening, such that nobody can kind of sort of run the show. And hopefully that's the way things trend.
Is that the direction you see the industry moving?
I don't know. I mean, people have been predicting that Apple would make some moves in this space for a long time, but they haven't. I think this Amazon one that's about to happen, if it happens, is very interesting. I think that Google, you know, like I said earlier, I think, you know, podcasting overall is growing rapidly, but still only represents sort of every ad dollar across all of podcasting is not $1 billion yet each year. And for these big companies, you know, $1 billion is like pocket change for them. So, I think it takes a lot for people to start sort of waking up and paying attention, and perhaps $100 million Joe Rogan deal starts to make people pay attention. Right. Yeah. So from that perspective, you know, maybe this will inspire, a little bit more interest from larger tech companies, which I think fundamentally will be good because we don't want to see any one company sort of take control. I think Apple has had a lot of control over the industry, but hasn't really done a lot. And so that's been okay in terms of maintaining openness and so on. And so we'll see where things go from here.
So I want to make a very tiny leap from Spotify and podcasting to parenting.
Sure.
I'm interested in your bio. You mentioned one of the things that it sounded like right around the same time that you're creating your company that you had a child. It seems like an interesting combination of life events.
Yeah, no doubt. I left Uber in April 2018, and my son was born in July of that year. And then I sort of decided to build this business with my co-founder in May. So sort of knowing that my son was right around the corner. It's been a wild ride, no doubt, to start a business and build everything from scratch while also building a family from scratch, has been among the more challenging times in my life. I think, whether it's not getting sleep or working out with your partner, how to live a life where you're, all of a sudden your free time has been eaten up by, walking with the stroller or playing with Legos or whatever it is we're doing. Amazing time to be able to spend together, but just such a huge change where, everything in your life starts to become centered around your family instead of yourself, right? So that's just been an amazing and crazy change all at the same time while building this business. I think there were times where it helped, right? I think having the flexibility and freedom around hours because I'm the boss has been helpful. If I need to work like weird hours in the middle of the night, then instead of the normal 9 to 5, that's been useful. And there have been times that it's hard. There have been times where you have to make choices, right? I think we decided as a family that this was like something we were cool with because. I think when we first moved out here, we moved, we got married, and we both started new jobs all at the same time. And so we've been through the kind of like, I think if you like ask psychologists, like what are the most stressful things you can do? Some of those are in the multiple ones of those are in the top five. And so we've done it before. And we were confident that we could do it again. I didn't want the fact that we were building a family to prevent us from pursuing the things that we care about most. Right. So totally. It's been challenging. It's also been just incredibly rewarding to see my son sort of grow and learn and, turn into an actual human that you can talk to now, instead of just the blob that cries and eats.
How old is he now?
He's almost two. He'll be two in July.
Wow. Yeah. I wonder if you're noticing any like lessons that carry over, I don't know if there's any way to really prepare for having a kid other than maybe like taking care of somebody else's kid. But like when you're thrown into parenting, it's such a different experience. I'm wondering if there are lessons that you've derived from that experience that have impacted your role, in business or even overarching in your life in general.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've had a lot of experience working with kids over my life, whether I used to be a teacher. And then I for many, many years, I worked at a summer camp working with kids of all ages. And I think there's a lot of parallels between working with a bunch of kids and working with a bunch of adults. And really what it comes down to is everybody's different. Everybody learns a different way. Everybody needs different things from you. You need to be able to meet people where they're at and be able to listen to them and understand their motivations and understand their way of learning and their way of understanding in order to actually connect with people. And so if you talk to different employees that have worked for me at Red Circle or work with me at Uber on my team and so on, I think, and you ask them sort of what my management style is, I think you'd find that they might say very different things.
And I think they're different, totally different people.
Yeah.
And you're able to put yourself aside and be there for them entirely. So they would experience it differently, I imagine.
That's a good way to put it. I don't know if I can put myself entirely aside because I'm a little too arrogant and selfish for that, but I can adapt the way I do things, right, for the different people that are there in front of us. And, you know, I studied educational psychology and stuff like that when I was preparing to be a teacher. And, you know, they teach you that, right? Like, and you just know it from your life. You have friends, everybody's different. Everybody needs different things. And then when it comes to a professional relationship, you know, why should that be any different, right? Your job as a manager is to help people to grow and discover their strengths and cultivate that. And, you know, if you just apply the same rules to everybody that comes by, you're not going to be able to do that. It'll work for some people, but it won't work for others, right? And, you know, a lot of people think about management as just like something that you can put some numbers on, or you know, ask the same questions, or prepare, you know, the performance review in the same way, and it just doesn't work like that. If you want to do it well, everybody has different needs, and so when you talk about parenting, like, you know, my kid prior to all this COVID stuff was in a daycare, and you'd see all kinds of different kids and different parents and different teachers, right? And they're all, you know, somewhere between one and two, and they're all learning how to, you know, pee in a potty or whatever. But, you know, everybody's at a different stage. Everybody has different needs. And I think, you know, being able to adapt your parenting style to the kid that's in front of you is important. And I think that's just going to get more and more important as the kid grows up and develops his own personality and likes and dislikes and stuff like that. Maybe he won't like, you know, airplanes like I do. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the most interesting things that I've learned from having kids, and now my daughter's four and my son's two, is this idea of being able to ask myself like what I want, need in any moment, and asking what are they expressing that they want and need, and then how do I find where that coalesces. And in parenting, it's very easy for me to see like, oh man, I'm giving them everything and I'm not even considering myself, or I'm only giving myself like what I want and not considering them, and there's like a fine calibration. And I imagine in team leadership that there's quite a bit of that as well.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think the difference is, I think, you know, parenting is an always on job. And I think you can turn off management for a minute and find time for yourself elsewhere. And so, you know, nice. I think in both cases, I think, you know, the people who are the best at both of those gigs are going to, you know, if there's a bias sort of towards self or towards other, I think it goes towards other, right? And I think, you know, it's especially important in business to be able to do that. I think it was very hard for me, you know, I was to describe sort of the arc of learning how to manage at Uber. When the team started, it was me and two other people. And, you know, we were up all night fixing things that were broke all the time. And so the three of us became experts at all of the systems that were there. And as the team grew, you know, we added more and more incredibly gifted software engineers. And in every case, you know, they'll tell you way more gifted than me. Mm. And so, you know, sure, I knew a lot about the systems that we had in front of us. But I was not able to fix everything that was broken or implement every new feature, right? And so it takes time. It took me time to learn how to say, you know what, I think maybe I could do this better than that person, but I can't do everybody's work. And so, you know, I'm going to be okay with this person taking it and doing the best they can and not micromanage them and tell them exactly how to do it, and kind of give up a little bit of the pleasure that I get for myself in building something and having it work in exchange for their growth and their learning, right? And that's, you know, I had to learn how to not be a control freak like that. And that's part of learning how, you know, let's say I'm arrogant enough to think that everybody else on my team is 80% as good as me. You know, five people at 80% is a lot stronger than one person at 100%. Right. And so you got to learn that, that part of managing is giving away the stuff you like, so that overall the team can achieve more.
Yeah.
That's great, man. I love the idea of how you can give people the space to do their best, to be their best, to learn how to do their best, and how that kind of flows over into this idea of creating Red Circle and how you're doing that for podcasters.
Yeah, totally. I think that's a good way to put it. I think that, you know, going back to what I said before about how I'm arrogant enough to think I'm there 80% of me, it's probably actually the other way around too, right? Everybody thinks they're great, right? So, but in reality, you know, a lot of your teammates have incredible strengths and probably can bring great solutions to the problems that they face. And so giving people freedom to learn and discover and make mistakes and get better, you know, these are all super important principles of management. And, you know, the micromanagers, you know, learn it quickly when they're people that work for them disappear or are afraid to take risks. You know, if you don't give them freedom, that's where you end up.
Certainly. And it's one of the best things is learning how to work with somebody who may in fact be better than you, so you can work toward that common goal instead of having that head-to-head competition, whereas you may have the common goal in front of you, but if you're competing, then that's going to impede your progress. So it's that management style is something that I think is, I don't know if undervalued is the right word, but I don't think it's utilized enough. And I love seeing that. You know, one thing that I love about podcasting is that now in 2020, the barriers to entry are so low. Anybody can, you know, pick up a $100 Blue Yeti, which is what I'm on right now, and create a podcast and share their thoughts, their emotions, their feelings. You know, that's a blessing and a curse, because you have so many podcasters who are out there. And so from your, you know, I'm asking your advice on this. So from your perspective, in your unique perspective in the industry, how does a podcaster distinguish itself from the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of other ones out there?
Yeah, great question. I mean, we are, Red Circle is an open platform. Anybody can sign up and get their podcast distributed out there. You know, we don't provide the mic. We also don't provide the like software that you would use to record. Right. But other than that, we give you everything else that you need to put it out there, and it's free, right? So it's quite easy. I wouldn't say it's quite easy to start a podcast. It's quite hard to start a podcast that people want to listen to.
Right.
You know, you can pressure your friends into listening and find somebody, you know, a couple folks or whatever. But, you know, people tend to exhaust their friends, exhaust their social media, exhaust all the possible ways that they can grow. And then end up in a place where they have, you know, people listening, but haven't grown to a size where they feel like they've achieved what they wanted to achieve with their message or what they wanted to say. And, you know, from there, things get really challenging. And that's why, you know, one of the reasons why Red Circle built cross promotions marketplace. So we have a piece of software where you can partner up with another podcast. Both parties exchange a short, you know, 30, 60 second clip where they sort of advertise their show. Both parties get to listen to the other party's ad and approve it. And then once that's done, Red Circle sort of takes care automatically of inserting those ads into both shows until, you know, about 2 weeks goes up, and we do those trades in kind. So, you know, if one podcast is bigger than the other, then, you know, it plays for longer on the smaller podcast. And so, you know, when you listen to the big podcast networks that are out there, you're going to hear them doing cross promotional ads between their shows all the time, because they work. You know, people, when they're thinking about podcasts, that's the best time to try to convince them to check out another one, right? And that's why we built this piece of software, which enabled that for independent podcasters for the first time. There's no other software out there that does this, which is this is super unique in the marketplace. And you know, we've got the data to show that it works. We've got the data to show we can watch IP addresses move from one podcast to the other, and you know, it's a pretty powerful tool to grow your audience from there. But you're going to have trouble, you know, growing your show unless you're producing a message that people want to hear, right? And you know, that comes about the quality of the audio, that has to do with, you know, who's on the show and what are you talking about, and it has to do with you know, can you put across a message that resonates with people where they want to come back every year. I mean, I've been listening to a podcast called Yeah, Dude. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
No,
it's two guys. They live in LA. they sit down on the couch and they just shoot the ish. I don't know if I'm supposed to curse on the show or not. Shoot the shit. They shoot the shit. And, you know, they have a little bit of structure to it, but not a ton. And, I think I've been listening to them for 10 years. And I, every time the thing comes up on my app and says there's a new one, I'm listening that day.
Nice.
And, you know, there's something there when you find a relationship with a host or hosts that you care about and that have something to say that's either funny or interesting or that you can connect with emotionally. And these guys are just funny. But you can connect with it emotionally sometimes. You know, that's the thing is that in the end of the day, content is what matters, right? You have to produce something that people really want to listen to. And then from there, you can use a tool like our cross promotion marketplace. You can use a tool like going on to other people's podcasts as a guest so that people become interested in you and what you have to say. You can use social media and other forms of marketing to try to get your message out there. But if you really want the best way for podcasts to grow is for people to tell their friends about you. And for that, you have to produce a show that, that just really makes people want to do that. Right. Yeah. And so that's why content is king. Getting amazing at your craft is the best way to grow.
Absolutely. And I will say
it's a conversation we have all the time.
Yeah.
Like this, what getting the message out there versus what's the message and like, and how much time do we dedicate to either? Yeah, so it's really nice to hear that and reassure. It's like it's about the message that's coming through, and then of course getting it out there would be helpful as well.
Yeah, and I will say we connected with Lori Seymour of Wisdom Talk Radio, and we did a, I guess I don't know what you want to call it. We recorded a mutual podcast, and we both released it on each other's platforms, which I know exactly isn't exactly cross promotion, but we found each other through that platform. So that was, you know, thank you for that.
Yeah, sure. That's perfect. I mean, you know, the Cross Promotions product has a little kind of back and forth messaging system, and you've seen people exchange phone numbers. I think there were two dating podcasts on the platform where they went out and had a drink together. And so I don't know what happened from there. So, you know, who knows? Right? We want to create a space for podcasters to be able to collaborate. And, you know, we offer the automated system for cross promotion. But if you guys want to do what you did, that sounds great. Episode drops are another very popular style that the networks use and others to try to drive new traffic to the shows, especially when they're new ones. And it seems to work great.
Yeah, it did. And we hope to use that a little bit more. Now, what do you see the industry? Do you see the industry shifting at all over the next 5 to 10 years? Obviously, we talked a little bit earlier about how we've seen it change from the early aughts to now, how it's in its teenage years. What do you see bringing it into, you know, full maturity? Do you see people completely shifting away from radio? Because we've talked about those ad dollars, and I know, you know, a big portion of that is because a lot of local ad spends, whereas, you know, on podcasts is going to be national or international. So I'm just curious what trends you're seeing now that will reflect, you know, further down the line.
Yeah. I mean, I think radio's lifetime is limited. You know, its last like main holding point is the car. And I think your car is going to become more and more connected over the next 20 years, and older cars will start to phase out. And, you know, whether it's Android Auto or CarPlay for iOS, eventually, you know, people are not going to be listening to the radio much. And so, yeah, I do think that is going to make its way out. And I think a lot of that is going to make its way into podcasting and into streaming audio. And, you know, the radio still has, you know, probably not right now because nobody's driving, but prior to the mess we're in, you know, 90% penetration in American adults. And I'll tell you, I'm not one of those adults. I haven't listened to the radio in a long time. So I think it's only a matter of, that's because, you know, my car has fancy stuff and, you know, it's not a fancy car, but you don't have to have a fancy car to be able to connect your phone up these days.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where I see things headed there in terms of listenership. I imagine we're going to get to the place where most Americans are listening to a podcast. As many folks are listening to a podcast as are listening to talk radio. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And then as far as kind of how, where the business goes, you know, I think there's going to be, I think this Joe Rogan deal and others like it are a sign that there's going to be more and more kind of highly produced you know, podcasts that are that where big money is exchanged. And you can see this battling out in the video world where there's Netflix and Amazon and everybody else at the top there, you know, where these big budget shows are going for big money to try to attract huge numbers of subscribers. But I still have a lot of confidence that there's room for the wacky and also, you know, more personal, you know, independent creator shows that are out there as well. So you can look at Netflix and Amazon, but there's also YouTube, right? Which is, in terms of business, you know, probably bigger than Netflix, or I don't know the exact numbers, but maybe it's on the same scale, you know, tens of billions of dollars, if not more, that those businesses are worth. And that's because they've created such engagement both on the side of people who are creating content and on consumption. And so, I imagine that there's going to be the more of these Joe Rogan size, giant deals, big shows, big money exchange at the top. And then platforms like Red Circle, which are going to enable the independent podcaster to make money on their work, just like YouTube did for its independent vloggers, are going to continue to foster an ecosystem of people who are creating, and in some cases touching millions. I mean, some of the biggest YouTubers are massive celebrities, right? And so you don't have to have, I think that's part of whether it's podcasting or even video these days, you don't have to have hundreds of thousands of dollars of production equipment and a whole team to produce something that people want to watch, right?
Right.
And the same thing goes for listening.
Absolutely. And I'm sure, going back to what you said a moment ago, you have a unique perspective in regard to how somebody operates inside a vehicle. You know, I haven't paid much attention lately, but I know previously Uber, Waymo through Google, you know, have been talking about fleet autonomous vehicles. I mean, how does the industry change when you don't even have to pay attention to the road anymore, when you can just have headphones in and your head down? I have to imagine that will have a huge impact on terrestrial radio as well as podcasting.
Yeah, that's another good point. I mean, that's a great point. First of all, I didn't have anything to do with autonomous stuff at Uber, but I still think all that stuff is very far out. You know, maybe at some point we'll be able to do it in the sunny and clearly marked roads in the South Bay of the Bay Area. It's a whole nother story to navigate the streets of Bangalore or Denver when it's snowing. Right. So anyway, I think it's going to be a long time before those things are really productionized. If you look at kind of the listening trends that have been happening during this crisis we're in, you know, consumption is down. People are not commuting. People are not going to the gym, right?
Right.
Times when people were listening to podcasts have slowly drifted away. And I think if we take away, driving, I think the radio is definitely in a lot of trouble. But then I also think, you know, people are going to start putting their eyes on screens instead of just their ears, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's probably fundamentally not great for podcasting if it happens, but I think it's still a long ways away. By then, we'll probably all be just plugging the internet into our brains anyway.
You know, Elon Musk can only hope, right?
Yeah.
Well, Mike, I appreciate the time you've taken to spend with us. Ernie, do you have any other questions for Mike?
I have so many more questions. I didn't realize the scope of what was possible in this conversation. I'm just like kind of kicking myself in the ass for not thinking of other avenues to go. This was incredible, and I won't drag it out anymore. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you guys. It was a ton of fun, and I appreciate the conversation.
Yeah. So Mike, where are the best places? I have to imagine, I know the answer to this. Where are the best places for people to find you, to learn more about Red Circle, and to really, you know, get acclimated to the podcasting realm if they're complete newbies?
Yeah. I mean, if you're interested in podcasting for the first time, or you have a podcast already and you want to turn it into a small business, the best place to go is redcircle.com. You can read a little bit about us on the website. You can check out the blog that's there, as well as our support information to tell you a little bit more about the capabilities of the platform. You can sign up for free. You can create your first podcast in a couple minutes if you want, or you can switch your podcast from whatever other platform it's on at the moment, usually in just a couple minutes, and we're happy to help you through that. If you want to connect with me, I think the best place to do that on the internet is with Twitter. My handle there is just M for Mike Kadin, K-A-D-I-N, M-K-A-D-I-N.
Cool. And I will say, like I mentioned previously, my old podcast, #questions, we had switched to Red Circle, and I didn't know what that was going to entail, but it was dead simple. I mean, I think we worked directly together and you just made it so easy. So again, I appreciate that.
Thanks. Yeah. And that, you know, our platform was pretty young by then. At this point now, we've done it for thousands of shows.
Yeah. And then, all right. So last but not least, one question I love asking all of our guests. I'm a huge reader. It's become a huge passion of mine. And so we do our best to talk with extremely intelligent people. You yourself are one of those people by far. And so I'm curious, what book, if you've had any leading up to this point, has been the biggest influence on your life?
Yeah, you guys prepared me for this, so I thought really hard about it. And I'm a reader, but I don't think I've had any book that's like really since childhood that has really like, you know, profoundly changed my life. What I will say is very recently a book that I've read has drastically changed my thinking. And that book is a book called Weapons of Math Destruction. And I should have remembered who it was by before here, but I'm sure you can Google it and find it. Weapons of Math Destruction. It goes over each chapter, kind of goes over a different algorithm or a different realm where math has been applied and the results have been disastrous, ranging from policing data to using algorithms for the U.S. News and World Report rankings of colleges and how that's had impact on cost of college and things like that. And just goes to show, you know, people always talk about like, let's go to the data, let's use the data to make decisions for us so that it's not a matter of opinion, it's a matter of numbers. But the fact is like, either if the data is garbage on the way in, you can have problems because then you'll have garbage on the way out. Right. Or if you're putting that stuff into algorithms and machine learning systems and stuff like that, that you don't fully understand, you can end up with results that are just as biased and just as problematic as if fallible people were making the decisions in the first place. And so it's just really amazing book to help you understand that, like, as a society, we're becoming more and more, attached to using numbers to make decisions, but they're, they're not perfect indicators of where things should go. So really interesting book.
Awesome. Yeah, I will check that out. Thank you again, Mike, truly for being a part of this. We look forward to growing with Red Circle and growing as podcasters too. So again, thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys. This is fun.
Awesome. Yeah, you're welcome.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much and be well.
One more time, Ernie and I would love to thank Mike Caden for joining us on the Mosaic Life podcast. If you are a podcaster or if you have any interest in starting a podcast, I highly encourage you check out Red Circle, redcircle.com or at Get Red Circle on all of the socials. If you just want to chat up Mike, you can find him on Twitter at mcaden. All of the relevant links are in the show notes. Thank you again, Mike. And as a reminder, this episode of the Mosaic Life podcast was brought to you by the Mosaic Life Circle. If you want to be notified when amazing interviews and conversations like this one right here come out, sign up for the Mosaic Life Circle at onemosaic.life. Last but not least, if you've enjoyed what you've heard in this conversation or any other, please do us a huge favor and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That goes a long, long way in helping others just like yourself discover us, and we would truly be appreciative of that. And then last but not least, follow us on Instagram at onemosaiclife for exclusive content like our Full Circle episode that Ernie put out a couple weeks ago. Thank you all so, so much for spending time with us. We truly appreciate it. We will be back soon. But until then, be well.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.